embattled Congressman Matt Gaetz.
Matt Gaetz was one of the very few members in the entire Congress who bothered to stand up against permanent Washington on behalf of his constituents.
Matt Gaetz right now, he's a problem for the Democratic Party, and he can cause a lot of hiccups in passing of laws. So we're going to keep running those stories to keep hurting him.
If you stand for the flag and kneel in prayer, if you want to build America up and not burn her to the ground, then welcome, my fellow patriots. You are in the right place. This is the movement for you.
You ever watch this guy on television? It's like a machine, Matt Gaetz.
I'm a canceled man in some corners of the internet. Many days I'm a marked man in Congress, a wanted man by the deep state.
They aren't really coming for me. They're coming for you. I'm just in the way.
Putin may circle Kyiv with tanks, but he'll never gain the hearts and souls of the Iranian people.
We're going to seize their yachts, their luxury homes, and other ill-begotten gains of Putin's kleptocracy and the guys who are the kleptocracies. But these are bad guys.
America is a nation that can be defined in a single word. I was going to put him...
Turn on the TV. Look at the ads. When's the last time you saw biracial couples on TV? When's the last time you saw the way, people are selling products, they do ads to sell products?
It is noteworthy that the percentage of women who register to vote and cast a ballot is consistently higher than the percentage of the men who do so. End of quote. Repeat the line. And she was forced to have to travel out of the state to Indiana to seek to terminate the presidency and maybe save her life.
Firebrand Live is back, broadcasting from our office in the Longworth Building on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. We've got a great Florida man, State Representative Anthony Sabatini, joining us in just a moment to answer the question, who is in charge anymore? We've got new management in the U.K. We've got the global elites flipping on the fundamental question of sanctions. You've got Joe Biden, a man in decline, doing his best to bring our nation into decline with him. And you've got Gavin Newsom doing everything he can to assert his control over the Democratic Party. Power really abhors a vacuum. It especially abhors a vacuum in Democrat politics. But it is interesting to see Gavin Newsom stepping forward to make his case for control of the Democratic Party. California ranks as the second most expensive place to live in the country. It also ranks as the second highest state in exporting its citizens to Florida. Coincidence? I think not. Through misguided government lockdowns and ridiculous tax rates and unhinged immigration, government bankruptcy, and crime run amok, native Californians have found themselves wanting to move to greener pastures. Places with just as much sunshine, zero income tax, more coastline, and better state governance. That place is Florida. Also, look at home prices. The cost of housing is increasingly a central issue, crushing the American family. Right now, median home price in Pensacola, Florida, $310,000. A little high, higher than it used to be. But compare that to Los Angeles, where that same home would cost $800,000. The same home in San Francisco with their needles and their parks and their shit-stained streets, that home would be $1.9 million. Why would you pay more for more mask theater? Now, with that in mind, California Governor Gavin Newsom got on the airwaves in Florida with the following surprising ad. Take a listen.
It's Independence Day, so let's talk about what's going on in America. Freedom, it's under attack in your state. Your Republican leaders, they're banning books, making it harder to vote, restricting speech in classrooms, even criminalizing women and doctors. I urge all of you living in Florida to join the fight, or join us in California, where we still believe in freedom. Freedom of speech, freedom to choose, freedom from hate, and the freedom to love. Don't let them take your freedom.
Paid for by Newsom for California Governor 2022.
The freedom to be crushed by taxes, the freedom to have illegal immigrants running all of your over your state, the freedom to pay for health care for those illegals. Here's some important context. In 2020, Florida's net income from domestic migration led the nation, number one, at $23.7 billion. Compare that to California's negative $17.8 billion, because people are voting with their feet and leaving California. Yet in the face of all of these indicators, Gavin Newsom emerges as a Democrat icon. Why? Because Democrats would rather be lied to by Gavin than just shuttled into sleep with Joe Biden. Perhaps Gavin has a tighter grip on the Democratic Party's policy agenda than our own president. Sad for America, but give Gavin Newsom credit for seizing the moment. Joining me now, one of the greatest America First fighters to have ever served in the Florida legislature, someone central to creating the Florida boom, one of the best allies of Governor Ron DeSantis in the Sunshine State, Anthony Sabatini. Representative Sabatini, what is your reaction to Gavin Newsom welcoming Floridians to California?
Well, Congressman, I think even George Orwell would be proud by his misuse of language. Like you mentioned in your monologue, he has literally turned words upside down. You know, I don't think there's a lot of freedom in California these days, but one freedom they still have that is being exercised quite rapidly is the freedom to leave. A lot of people are trying to get out of California, and for now, at least, they're free to leave. So, you know, going through that ad, I tell you, the first thing I would note is, like you mentioned, up until this time, California's biggest export were people getting out and coming to the state of Florida. Now it seems the biggest export is going to be these new TV ads where they send them into different states trying to beg people to come back. But of course, people are wiser than that. They don't want to be there. Why? Because there is no freedom in California. You don't have the freedom to defend yourself if you're attacked by somebody. You don't have the Second Amendment rights, and your prosecutor isn't even able to prosecute some of these criminals. You don't have the freedom to own a home. Taxes and regulations have made it that home ownership is just out of reach for the average Californian. And they talk about it in the ad. He talks about the freedom to love. How are you supposed to love somebody when you're forced to wear three masks in every public space that you go to? So you can't even meet somebody.
Love really through a mask, the California story, right? Right? You've never seen love prevail like when it has to prevail through three masks. So, Representative Sabatini, what would you say is central to Florida's success? I mean, as you and I have traveled around the country, we've heard from so many policy leaders on the right saying, gosh, you know, what do we have to do to become more like Florida? What would be your advice?
Ironically, it's exactly what's highlighted in this ad. It's freedom. Florida is a whiteboard. People come here and they do what they want. I always tell people, you got the American dream. Well, the Florida dream is like the American dream in the American dream. You know, my family came down from New York. People come from all over looking for opportunity and looking for a place where they can create something great, whatever it is that means whatever that means to them, you know, being free. So DeSantis knows that, our governor knows that, our legislature knows that, and you know that. And so that's why our utmost goal is to reinforce and create a sense of freedom when it comes to taxes, regulation, laws, and just letting people do what they want and be what they want. That's the key to Florida's success. And I think it's going to continue to be the key.
California was seen at one point as the center of innovation. That was their great export. They would, you know, have the greatest minds in the world all choosing to move to California and collaborate with one another. As a result of remote work, we've really seen human talent democratize around the country. How have you seen that in Florida, and particularly in Central Florida?
Oh, absolutely. You know, people are able to choose Florida to be their lifestyle, but still work in a national or global economy just by staying here. We're seeing it every day. We're seeing towns be revitalized, and quiet places outside of Orlando, like I represent, are now becoming bustling centers because people are coming in. They're bringing their money. They're bringing their energy and ideas. I see it every single day. And it's led to a sort of rebirth of the economy in places where it didn't exist before then, mostly because of these other states running themselves into the ground. I see it every single day here.
While I know many conservatives are worried about big tech censorship and certainly illegal immigration and election integrity, all issues, I certainly want to talk about the number one issue that I've been hearing about the rising price of goods, the rising price of fuel, the shrinkflation at the grocery store where the package of peppers that you used to buy, well, if it's the same price, it's a lot smaller in terms of what you're actually getting for your family as a part of the consumer experience. And Gavin Newsom in California has responded to inflation by handing money out to people to combat inflation. It strikes me as the dumbest thing to possibly do. It actually will create more inflation. And I just wonder, like, the discipline that you've shown in the Florida legislature, that really generations of Florida legislators have shown with fiscal policy, by building up state reserves, by not having these government programs that just spit money at people. You know, has that created an economic resilience for Florida? And what's your reaction to policies that actually exacerbate inflation in the name of curbing inflation?
That is exactly right. Just like we learned, in the response to the Great Depression, a lot of the policies that get thrown to combat these terrible atrocities in the economy actually exacerbate and make things worse. And so that scarcity that results from subsidizing things is something we've always tried to push back against. You know, one of the first things they're trying to push, I'm talking about the Democrats in the legislature and those on the left, one of the first things they're trying to push this year and going forward are rent control devices, different types of laws to dictate the prices of rent. And what that does is it drives up the scarcity and ends up having the opposite result what they want, which is that people who are trying to get the few properties for rent have less of a chance of doing so because everybody else is locked out of the market. The goal needs to be to bring down prices. How do you do that? Competition and increasing quantity of goods and services that are sold for whatever it be, rent or goods or whatever. That means embracing the free market economy more fully. You know, a lot of times we see these failures in the economy and it's because of restrictions on a free economy. This is sort of a time-old tale. And Florida is the king at resisting these interventions in the economy. And exactly what you said is exactly right. It's why we've become more resilient over the years. And prices are lower in Florida. Home ownership is higher and cheaper in Florida. And as much as we're dealing with the Biden economy and the Bidenflation, we know that embracing free market reforms is what's going to keep prices down and get us back to where we were in the Trump years.
You have been one of the national fighters against these state policies that seem to encourage illegal immigration. And in California, there are barriers to state law enforcement, even working with our Customs and Border Patrol, with ICE, to ensure that we have protection at the border and also internal enforcement of our immigration laws. And then you know what happens. Illegal aliens know, I've been to the California-Arizona-Mexico border. I've been to that exact spot. And what the law enforcement say is they'll literally run away from Arizona and into California because they know the state and local law enforcement there can't engage in coordination. Those very people then get health care benefits and other benefits that rely on drawdowns from the federal government. So that means that your constituents, Representative Sabatini, and my constituents are seeing their federal tax dollars used to incentivize illegal immigrants into the state of California. That seems fundamentally unfair. How do you think the federal government ought to treat states that are purposefully recalcitrant on the issue of border protection and illegal immigration?
I think the federal government needs to play a major role in doing that. I think it needs to actually use both the carrot and the stick to stop these states from engaging in those policies. You know, here in Florida, we shut down sanctuary cities. That was the right thing to do. Now it's time for the federal government to shut down sanctuary states. That means cutting off funding, tightening regulations, utilizing and using federal power to punish these states, both with civil and criminal remedies for when they exacerbate lawbreaking and bring in illegal immigrants. On top of that, there's a lot that the federal government can do to incentivize and even mandate the use of E-Verify and other measures that make it that states have to use a legally compliant workforce within their own borders. And I think that's something we really need to be engaged in very quickly, because the 13 million at a minimum illegal immigrants that we have in this country is having a major effect both on crime, but also on the scarcity of housing. Going back to the economy, we know that housing is going to go up as long as you have an open border. We can't even provide enough housing for our own people, much less the world's people. And so the federal government needs to use civil and criminal remedies to put forth, and I plan on joining you in legislation to make sure that we can actually drop the hammer on these states when we get the White House and control of Congress in the next couple of years.
This is absolutely essential. A serious nation cannot allow appendages of the nation to be sanctuary against our laws when it comes to who's allowed to be in our nation. That should just never happen. And I mean, you think about California, it used to be a red state. And then it was a purple state, and now it's a reliably blue state. And the reason is because they've allowed a lot of these illegal immigrants to vote. And I mean, we see there was a recent Wall Street Journal piece, go ahead and put it up, guys, showing this mass migration of people out of California into Florida. Not just Florida, but you see the SEC states are pretty much gaining population. Red states are gaining population, and people are abandoning as refugees, Illinois, California, and places where certainly the policies are more reflective of what I hear from the left here in Washington, D.C. But if they get the illegal immigrants in to replace the citizens that are leaving, that they've already abandoned, then their goal is to get those illegal immigrants voting. That is critically important to them. Now in Florida, Representative Anthony Sabatini, you have led efforts on election integrity to push for strong chain of custody over ballots, strong verification of people's ID. How should Americans think about this grand plan on the left to lash their immigration policies with an erosion of the election integrity measures that ensure that lawful votes are not diminished?
Well, the first key is to do exactly what you just did, is identify it. You know, a lot of people are asleep and they don't realize that the left, whether it be in a centralized or decentralized way, is pushing a lot of policies in conjunction to fundamentally reshape the country. One of them is bringing folks in who don't really quite understand the nature of a republic and the idea of self-sacrifice and what it is we're voting for every time we go into the ballot box. And at the same time, making it extremely, extremely lax voting laws, easy to vote, and therefore easy to cheat. You know, what we've done in Florida is we've identified this trend and what the Biden regime is trying to do, and we've made it more secure in our voting stations and our voting systems. One of those things is securing ballot boxes, making it that you can't just have these random ballot boxes sitting out on the side of the street. Another one is making it that people actually have to verbally and in written form request before they vote by mail. Of course, I ultimately want to reduce the amount of vote by mail, which means the reducing the amount of vote by mail fraud, but making it that they have to use a social security number, a driver's license, voter ID when they request those ballots is really key. And of course, most famously, we banned Zuckerbucks. Third parties, billionaire third parties, should not be playing a role in how our elections are conducted in free states. Those are a few of the measures that we got signed into law by Governor DeSantis over the last few years. And I think we need to continue moving in that direction until we have 100% security and confidence in our elections.
It is a perfect roadmap for other states. And so if you live in Michigan or Georgia or Pennsylvania or Arizona, you don't have to live this way. Florida has shown how to go from a laughingstock on election management and reporting and transparency to the model for the country. And a big reason why great fighters like State Representative Anthony Sabatini, leading on election integrity, leading against illegal immigration, ensuring that our education system is worthy of the values of our great country. And most importantly, Anthony Sabatini is leading on the issue of freedom, both as a state legislator and I think as a private attorney, sued almost every government entity in Florida that was trying to impose mandates on our great people. Representative Sabatini, how can folks follow you and keep up with your great work?
Well, thank you, Congressman. My handle on almost all forms of social media is at Anthony Sabatini on Twitter, Truth, Getter, Gab, all of it. Come find me. And of course, they could always email me at my statehouse site, which is on myfloridahouse.gov. The Florida legislative website's got my email on there.
Thanks for joining us, and thanks for fighting for the great free state of Florida.
Thanks, Congressman. Take care.
We are going to stay on the subject of elections and election integrity. And there is a hot story going on in Arizona that requires a great deal more attention. Right now, your federal tax dollars are being used to bully the state of Arizona against their desire to have an actual verification of citizenship at the time of voting. As Representative Sabatini just discussed, we actually should be improving ways to verify ID, citizenship, chain of custody on ballots in every state of the country. And then when Arizona actually stepped forward and said, you know what, we want to verify citizenship for the voting process, the United States Department of Justice Civil Rights Division went after them. This is a shocking affront to civil rights. Now, Arizona recently passed a law. It requires proof of citizenship in presidential elections. So when registering to vote for the first time, a voter would have to write down their address when filling out a ballot and bubble in a box stating that that voter is, in fact, an American citizen. The horror! Apparently, this is such an injustice that the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice is suing the state of Arizona. Assistant Attorney General Kristen Clark called the new Arizona law, quote, a textbook violation of the National Voter Registration Act. What? Call me crazy, but I always thought the purpose of the National Voter Registration Act was to protect the right of Americans to vote and to not have their vote diluted by people who are not citizens, who are not in our country legally, who are not eligible to vote. It's beyond reasonable to ensure that particularly those voting in presidential elections are able to prove their citizenship. All they got to do is bubble in a box. It ain't exactly the poll tax. But this activist Department of Justice isn't reasonable on the issue of voting. The DOJ Civil Rights Division is chocked full of far left activists. I mean, these are people on the far fringes of left-wing politics. In fact, you might remember Dr. Pamela Karlan, who is now the principal deputy assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division. But she gave testimony before the House Judiciary Committee during the Trump-Ukraine impeachment, where she even stooped so low as to insult the president's son, Barron. Take a look at this clip to jog your memory.
The Constitution says there can be no titles of nobility. So while the president can name his son Barron, he can't make him a baron.
I just have to say, when you talk about how liberals want to be around each other and cluster, and conservatives don't want to be around each other and so they have to spread out, it makes people, you may not see this from, you know, like the ivory towers of your law school, but it makes actual people in this country
when
feel like,
excuse
me, you don't get to interrupt me on this time. Now, let me also suggest that when you invoke the president's son's name here, when you try to make a little joke out of referencing Barron Trump, that does not lend credibility to your argument. It makes you look mean. It makes you look like you're attacking someone's family, the minor child of the president of the United States.
When Dr. Pamela Karlan is empowered to go and bully the state of Arizona away from proof of citizenship to vote, they're not acting in good faith. These are not well-meaning lawyers fighting to protect your civil rights. These are partisan activists working to steal the next presidential election. There is no justification for the Department of Justice trying to strike down proof of citizenship other than they want to make it easier for non-citizens to vote. That's the deal. Why else would you stand against a citizenship attestation? It's because they want the non-citizens voting because they've let so many of them in. It's part of the grand plan. As we've covered extensively, the border crisis is not an accident. They want to flood this country with foreigners who are not given permission to be here, and then enable them to vote in presidential elections in swing states like Arizona. That's why they settle these aliens in a lot of swing states, actually, releasing them into the interior of our country. A lot went to Pennsylvania. The Democrats know that their policies aren't attractive to Americans. And if they can't convince Americans to vote for them, they will import people who will. And that plan doesn't work unless those new people you've imported can actually vote, and a citizenship requirement would get in the way of that grand plan. We must stop these subversive actions against our country at all costs. It is about protecting the integrity of our elections. We are not a banana republic. We're the United States of America. And if we don't have borders and fair elections, we don't have a country. It's that simple. We cannot afford to lose this battle. We have to fight like we've never fought before on this critical question, and I would say this critical intersection of election integrity and immigration. We have to be very strong on both, a lot stronger than Republicans have been, but good for those folks in the state of Arizona. We will help you fight back against this activist, political, partisan Department of Justice. We are seeing a reversal of some matters on the global stage right now, particularly as it relates to the way the elites talk about sanctions. Now, Fareed Zakaria is a CNN contributor. He is an opinion contributor for the Washington Post, and he's basically the mouthpiece for the global elite. This was his perspective on sanctions previously.
The Biden administration deserves huge credit for the economic measures it's been able to take against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. As an essay by Gary Huffbauer and Megan Hogan note, they are the most comprehensive imposed against a major power since the Second World War. On a punishment scale, they rank them as at least an 8 out of 10. I support the sanctions against Russia.
8 out of 10, I support the sanctions. Rah, rah, sanctions. I mean, you could not have had a bigger cheerleader for these sanctions. And frankly, there's a whole lot of folks. But I was the lonely voice in the wilderness at times, warning people that the effects of these sanctions might not be as the architects intended. Take a listen to my remarks at that time.
I don't really know that the sanctions would play out the way the architects would hope. Right now, we see more and more Chinese investment funds buying up distressed Russian assets. I think there are huge geopolitical consequences to driving Asia's largest producer of energy into the arms of Asia's largest consumer of energy. That could create a Sino-Russian alliance that would pose a far greater threat to America than even the terrible carnage that we hope ends in Ukraine.
And this is the thing. My critics always say, oh, well, if you're not for the Russia sanctions, you're Putin's advocate, Putin's lawyer, the Putin wing of the Republican Party. No, I am the America First wing of the Republican Party. And by the way, I make no apology for it. So I made those comments about the misguided nature of some of these sanctions against Russia in March. Fareed did the bear hug of the sanctions, talking about how glorious they were in May. And even Business Insider took note that it was basically Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massey, and myself as the three Republicans who were skeptical of some of these economic actions that the Democrats and the Republicans and the neoconservatives and heck, even the Squad were all on board for. And just this Sunday, we see a very different narrative coming out of Fareed Zakaria. Take a listen.
It is now clear that the economic war against Russia is not working nearly as well as people thought it would. Vladimir Putin cares less about what these sanctions do to the Russian people than he does about what they do to the Russian state. And thanks to rising energy prices, Bloomberg projects that the Russian government will make considerably more revenue from oil and gas than it did before the war, around $285 billion in 2022 compared to $236 billion in 2021. Revenues from oil and gas alone make up almost half the government's budget. And unfortunately, the solution would not be for the West to stop buying Russian energy altogether, because with less supply on the world's market, it would only drive prices even higher. Having developed a dangerous dependence on Russian energy over the last two decades, Europe cannot quickly change that without plunging into a deep and protracted recession.
There was never a plan with these sanctions regimes for the pain to be fully borne by Vladimir Putin and his crony thugs rather than the American people. And so there you saw it. You saw all of the desire of Fareed and the global elites to embrace these sanctions. Warnings from myself, Massey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, incredible pain for the American people at the gas pump with agricultural products, with consumer products. And now you see the total boomerang from Fareed Zakaria saying, oh, well, you know, this economic war just hadn't worked. And by the way, Russia's making more money. Like, how come the media isn't talking more about that? That this sanction regime that we've put out there has actually allowed Vladimir Putin to see a dramatic increase in the price of oil and gas. He's got all the customer base he needs still in Europe and with China. And he's laughing at us like fools as our people in our country suffer for this war. It didn't have to be that way. We could have gone in with a plan. We could have had greater unity. We could have had greater foresight. And we could have had a more rational approach to what we were capable of doing and not capable of doing before our own constituents, our fellow Americans, saw their lives changed for the worse. Shame on the global elites and the politicians and the Biden administration for embracing these sanctions without fully appreciating their consequences. Now we see those consequences, and they will likely result in Democrats being out of power, at least in some places, on Capitol Hill. Now, I haven't heard a whole lot of my colleagues going out into the country saying that they really just need to be more committed to the war in Ukraine. Right? I mean, most people are trying to present an economic plan or an immigration plan, or, you know, on the left, people are trying to create all kind of histrionics over January 6th. But there aren't that many saying, vote Democrat so that we could print more of your money to send to Ukraine. Vote Democrat so that we can borrow money from one country and give it to another. And an exception to this rule is Ruben Gallego, Arizona congressman, serves with me on the Armed Services Committee, and this is his tweet. I'll read it to you. Fact is, if the Republicans take over the House in 2022, U.S. support for Ukraine will come to a halt. They will not be able to stop Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz from dictating our Ukraine policy. You know what, Representative Gallego? From your lips to God's ears, if Republicans take control, I will work with Marjorie Taylor Greene and others to ensure that we do not borrow money from one country to send it to another, that we do not print money, thereby devaluing the work and the savings of our fellow Americans so that we can engage in neoconservative misadventurism in Europe. I do not hope that Russia prevails in this conflict. Matter of fact, I enthusiastically am rooting for Ukraine. But the funding, the resources, the logistics ought to matter more to Europe than to the United States of America. And the fact that we've sent like nearly $60 billion into this battle while we have a porous border with Mexico, while we have needs for our people, while the printing of money is creating escalating costs and challenges for our families, it's entirely irresponsible. And you know what? When leaders are irresponsible, sometimes it's the end of the road. There is new leadership coming in the United Kingdom. Boris Johnson out. That's been well chronicled. The various and sundry reasons seem to have compounded. And guess what? You knew it was coming if you were watching Firebrand in January. My good friend Raheem Kassam, who is the publisher of The National Pulse, that's thenationalpulse.com, he was our guest to discuss geopolitics, British politics, and he made this amazing prediction in January. Take a listen.
In a post-Brexit world, you had the Conservative Party, which is by no means conservative. It's just a moniker nowadays. Re-establish itself as the electoral force in the United Kingdom. And they did a pretty good job of it. Boris Johnson got a whopping 80-seat majority in the House of Commons. It meant that he could basically rule as he wanted to, introduce whatever legislation that he or his wife, which I'll get into in a second, wanted him to. And it hasn't worked out very well because as the Conservative Party always does, it kind of reverts to this establishment, disconnected with the public type of governing philosophy. And now there are all sorts of scandals swirling around 10 Downing Street, which is the executive branch of the British government, not least to do with Boris Johnson's new wife. We don't have a constitutional role for a kind of a first lady in the United Kingdom. So people are starting to ask questions because this lady, Carrie Simmons, Carrie Johnson, appears to be at the heart of so many decisions that are being made at the heart of the British government, a lot of the climate change policy stuff. She was very well entrenched with the Clinton Initiative, for instance, used to work for one of their offshoots. People are starting to ask, well, where exactly is Boris Johnson getting his left-leaning credentials from? Where is he taking this all from? And it appears to be her. And there are scandal upon scandal upon scandals which are building in the United Kingdom right now. If I were a betting man, I would say that Boris Johnson doesn't look like he could desperately hold on to power for much of this year. It does depend if there's a challenger from within the Conservative Party, but it looks to be a tumultuous year in British politics in the very same way it looks to be a tumultuous year in US politics.
So Kassam predicts that Boris Johnson will lose power. And he predicts that the reason he'll lose power is an accumulating list of scandals and a departure from the policies and practices that were promised to the people of Great Britain. Gosh, really, really prescient stuff from Raheem Kassam. And it shows you can see the future if you watch Firebrand and if you listen to us. That's enough for the show today. I want to make sure that you're subscribed with notifications turned on. That way you are right there at the beginning for our discussions as we go live from Washington, D.C. to really pull the layers of the onion back and show you what's going on in your government. Certainly, you deserve a government that is doing more, that is winning your battles, and that's what we fight for every day. Thanks for joining us. Roll the credits.